I'm Jen Dean, a life coach, a family coach, business and health coach, and today we're talking about what keeps us going in life. Not when everything is fine, but what about when life doesn't go according to plan? Maybe you're carrying stress. Maybe you're supporting someone you love as they're going through a hard thing. Maybe you're tired and it looks like everyone else seems to be holding it all together. So what's wrong with me? Well, first, we're going to hear from Mandy Casper. She spent years helping cancer patients and then found herself facing cancer treatments herself. And what she thought would be a six-month challenge turned into years of setbacks, treatments, and finally, recovery. She is sharing what kept her going when it was really, really hard. And then later in the show, Dr. Jody Carrington is joining us. We're going to talk about stress, overwhelm, and why we're running on empty. She's going to give us practical ways to calm our nervous systems and show up better for the people we love. If life has felt a little heavy lately, I think you'll find something in today's show. Mandy Casper, you're willing to kind of share your heart on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mandy, you spent 15 years as a radiation therapist, so you supported people through some of the hardest moments of their lives. What was that like?
You know, looking back on it, I have a different perspective now. But at the time, I was so surprised to see how positive the cancer patients were. People always say, how can you deal with that every day? It must be so depressing and so hard. But I don't know, I felt like a fight in them. They were trying to get well. Of course, there was really sad times and things that were hard. But you know, it's just a privilege, I guess, to walk beside during the hardest times of their life. And I just focused on that. And, you know, it was a really rewarding career for the time that I was there at the Alan Blair Cancer Center.
Let's think about though, that day that you found out you yourself were now battling cancer. What was different now? You weren't walking someone else through it. Now you were going through it.
I was completely naive. You'd think I'd have more of a understanding because I worked there. But I thought because, you know, I don't see the patients at home. I don't see them after work. I see them for this short time that they're there for treatment. For the most part, they seem positive and, you know, and then they go on their way. And so to me, it was like, okay, I'm just going to keep on working.
Oh.
I'm going to do my treatment and I'm going to kick cancer's butt and it's going to be a period in my life and we're going to move on.
Yeah, I could see how that might go wrong.
Yeah.
How did that fall apart for you, Mandy?
Well, after my first treatment, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in April of 2021. And I was told, oh, this is the good cancer. There's like a 95% to 98% chance that you're going to be cured with frontline treatment. It's 6 months of chemo. You know, it's going to be tough, but you can do it. And I was just, I had waited so long for my diagnosis that once the diagnosis came and I was relieved that I was like, okay, at least I know what it is because I knew something was wrong for a year. I'm like, let's do this. We're just going to beat this thing. And, you know, I had great friend support and family support. My coworkers were all behind me.
Yes.
And then I had my first treatment and I was like, ooh, yeah, this is going to be rough.
We're not going back to work now.
I guess I'm not going to work. And
no,
it's funny because like I had said, like my plan is to still work at least part time. And, you know, the radiation oncologist, my colleagues and stuff, they're like, huh. Okay. Yeah.
Like, but it's, yeah, you're trying to be positive and we support you, but let's also be realistic.
That's correct.
Right?
Yeah. And so I did my 6 months of chemotherapy and I remained positive throughout all of that, I would say, for the most part. Obviously, it was hard. But then I had my PET scan and that was just make sure that the cancer was gone. And I was the 2% where the treatment didn't work.
No.
So at that point, that's when I would say my world really crumbled and the positivity went right out the window and it was a struggle and a battle after that.
Mandy Casper joining the show today, sharing her personal story of fighting cancer when she was in the 2% that did not respond to treatment. She's going to share what it really is like for her to build that resilience, to come back and to live cancer-free today. Mandy, people say, I can't imagine what that would have been like. Is that a good thing to say or not a good thing to say?
I mean, I think it's better to say something than to say nothing, right? And so, you know, even looking back now, so I can say to my own self, I'm like, I can't believe I went through that. You know, I can't, you know, it's when you're in the midst of it, you just are fighting, right?
Yes.
And it's sort of like either I give up and die, or I keep pushing through and going forward. So I went through two more chemotherapies and immunotherapy. None of that worked. I did radiation therapy, finally got to remission, and then ultimately had a stem cell transplant. And then I've had no evidence of disease since then.
So what you told yourself was going to be a 6-month blip in my life, you know, just a little speed bump, but I'm going to keep working. It became like what? How long did this part of your life
It was about three years of treatment, because after the stem cell transplant, they put me on another year of maintenance immunotherapy. And so it was 3 years of treatment. But then once you're done the treatment, it's like the recovery starts. And I'd say it took me at least a good year to kind of get my feet back under me.
So what you thought was just going to be a little blip has now become not even, do you even think of it as like a blip in your life now? Or is it kind of a defining, this is who I am?
Yeah, like I would say that the cancer diagnosis doesn't define me, but it's definitely a part of my story. And anyone who goes through cancer, they do not come out of it unscathed or unchanged, for the better or for the worse, right? So I'm a totally different person now than I was when I started. So yeah, it's definitely a part of who I am now. And I'm a huge advocate for health.
Yes.
And for, you know, I have a soft spot. Obviously, I've always had a soft spot for people with cancer, but it's a lot more personal now.
Yes. Now, do you still work in that field? Are you back to work? Do you have any plans on going back to work?
Yeah, so I had to make the hard decision of going back to the clinic or not. I knew I couldn't leave the profession completely. I actually have a new job. I'm the Saskatchewan Provincial Manager for the Canadian Association of Medical Radiation Technologists. So the medical radiation technologists are those who do X-ray, CT, MRI, mammo, nuke med, radiation therapists, of course. I probably forgot one, but anyone who handles radiation. So I get to work from home. And it's part-time, so it's a real blessing, and it still allows me to be in the profession, but
yes.
I didn't know if I'd be able to go to the clinic every day after being treated there and just be able to give my best to the patients who deserve the best.
And what you're doing matters because you're caring for the people who are caring for the cancer patients.
That's right. Yeah. And ultimately it's the patients that we serve. And so I'm also on the Canadian Medical Association Patient Voice Advisory Board. So I have my hands and feet still in the medical system, and I'm able to, you know, still use my skills as a radiation therapist to help patients in our province.
When we come back, Mandy Casper is going to share her advice for you. Hold on to it. Keep it safe. For when your world falls apart, we're going to do something called fear casting. When we come back, we're going to look our biggest fears in the eye, and Mandy is going to help us build resilience. We hope these things don't happen, but if they do, we will get through it. Stay with me. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Welcome back. Mandy Casper is here, and she is helping us build resilience. And we are looking some hard things in the eye. Not only did she work as a radiation therapist helping patients that were suffering with cancer, but then she herself was diagnosed and walked through what she hoped would be 6 months, turned out to be years. Her life did not go the way that she thought. And she has overcome. She is cancer-free today.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Mandy, now I'm curious. There is a kind of, well, I guess a philosophy. It's called fear casting. And it's kind of the opposite of the positivity, like the forecast. We're going to goal set. We're going to be positive. We're going to, you know, we're going to visualize everything coming the way we want it. There's this other side that's called fear casting. And it's our worst fears. Let's look them in the eye. Instead of hiding from them, instead of running from them, avoiding them, let's just like go there and say, okay, for many of us, for me, one of my worst fears is cancer. And so to hear from someone like you, who's not only helped hundreds, thousands of people through it, but has walked that road yourself, what would you say to someone who's deeply afraid of having to go through that one day.
I totally hear what you're saying because when I was first diagnosed too, like everyone's just like, just stay positive, just stay positive. And I felt like, okay, yeah, I want to stay positive, but at the same time, I don't want to be ignorant to the reality of the situation. And I felt like for me, what really helped was to lay it all out there and say, hey, like this is a cancer diagnosis. I had a really good prognosis. Now I don't. That's the facts of the world. But what is like the truth of my heart? And so, I've seen miracles happen. There's always hope. There's people and patients that I've encountered that had less than like a 2% chance of living, and they're here 20 years later. I know someone who's lived with metastatic breast cancer. They're on year 23 now. Like there's always hope, and it's important to cling on to that. And, depends on every person, right? Like some people, they don't want to go down that road. They don't want to face it. But the reality is, we're all going to expire at some point. And for some people to come to terms with that, that's very helpful. For others, they're not ready to do that. So, it's so individual. Cancer affects everyone so differently. Although we may all have the same cancer diagnosis, if we're all in the same room, everyone has a different story. Everyone has a different journey. So, I would just say cling to hope. Remember that you're not a statistic, and as much as the doctors have your best interest in mind, they're not God. They don't know what's going to happen. So, they do their best and take it with a grain of salt, use their medical wisdom, but also, self-reflect, take a look at yourself and just say, how am I going to handle this personally? And surround yourself with people that can encourage you and lift you up.
Yes, even when you're not, even when you're having your hard day, right? Mandy Casper, you beat the odds. You had a, is that correct? You had a 2% chance?
Well, no, I had a 98% chance of being cured with frontline treatment. So I was in the 2% that it didn't work. But I think once I got to that, they told me it was a 50-50 shot.
That is still a
Still
fifth.
not ideal.
50-50, and you are here today. And I would say, okay, as we wrap up, Mandy Casper, cancer survivor, helping cancer patients now today, what would you say to someone who maybe just got a diagnosis?
I would say don't panic. I would say you need to remember how long it pro likely took for that cancer to grow. I think when we get that cancer diagnosis, immediately we think, okay, I need to be on treatment, I need chemo, radiation, like tomorrow. And you get so bombarded with so much information, it's so overwhelming. So I would say just calm down, take a breather. You have some time to like really absorb the information that you're given. I would also suggest to every appointment that you go to, if you could bring someone with you, because another set of ears is very helpful when you're talking to the doctors and they're giving you all this information and it's just so overwhelming. So I would just say, don't panic, bring someone with you, take a deep breath, and you're going to get through this.
Can we say somehow you're going to come through this changed and you're going to come through this better in the end?
Absolutely. If it, I wouldn't say I'm thankful for cancer
Fair.
itself, but I am so thankful for the blessings and things that have come because of the diagnosis. And if you choose to look at it that way, and cancer patients have a different lens on life, right? I don't know how to describe it, but it's like, you've kind of come close to the edge and you just realize how grateful you need to be for each day. Every day is not guaranteed whether you have cancer or not. So, you can really change your perspective and have a different outlook on life and allow cancer to change you in a positive way if you choose to.
Mandy, you created an Instagram account called The Cancer Chicken.
Yes, I did. Yeah, I didn't actually create it right when I got diagnosed, but I did it kind of partway through my journey. Yeah, we live on an acreage and I had always wanted goats and chickens. And before I kind of right around the time of my diagnosis, in fact, 1 month prior to my official diagnosis, I got my first batch of chickens and I already had goats on order. And I was kind of going to live out my dream here of having these farm animals. And everyone said to me, what are you doing? Like, you just got diagnosed with cancer. Like, you got to get rid of the goats and the chickens.
Right, this is not the time.
This is a bad time to start trying to be a farmer. And, you know, I said, no. A part of me said, hey, I don't know if this doesn't turn out. I want to make sure I have my chickens and I live out my best life with my chickens.
That's right.
And then, you know what? I kept them. I kept the goat and it was the absolute best thing for me. I found that helping the animals and having to take care of the animals and having someone who needed me besides just my children, of course, I had to take care of them too. It got me out of bed on hard chemo days. I would go out there and I would just, you know, have my own animal therapy session and I'd hang out with the goats. I'd hang out with the chickens and they really honestly became my best friends throughout my treatment. And so I did document all of that and it's on my Instagram page at The Cancer Chicken. And now I've continued it and now I just post like funny videos of my shenanigans. We have turkeys now and cats and it's just kind of evolved from there, but it's just kind of a fun page that offers some lighthearted whatever.
Now you're a chicken farmer.
A chicken tender, I believe is the...
Oh.
Yeah.
You're a chicken tender. Mandy, thank you so much. What I'm hearing is no matter how hard it is for us right now, there's value in nature, in animals, in getting outside, getting out of ourselves, pouring into someone else, something else. That makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Mandy Casper, you have come through this not only more joyful, more peace in your own heart, but I think you're able to help so many people through this. Thank you for the work that you're doing in your field and for just loving on your family every day.
Thank you so much.
Follow The Cancer Chicken on Instagram. I love Mandy's posts, her videos about taking care of her chickens. Mandy talked about getting through one of the hardest seasons of her life. And maybe you're not facing cancer, but maybe you're carrying stress, worry, or exhaustion of your own. Dr. Jody Carrington is next, and she's going to help us understand why we feel overwhelmed and overstimulated and what we can do about it. It's A Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Do you notice that you're able to give the best part of yourself to that project, to the volunteer, to that passion thing, that hobby, to work? But then we come home. And how do we respond to the most important people in our lives? Our partners, our kids, our parents. We can be rude, grouchy, impatient, sarcastic. I want to do better, and I know you do too. This is the show where we talk honestly about how to build healthier relationships, calmer homes, stronger emotional habits. I'm a family coach, a life coach, but I brought in some big guns today. I have Dr. Jody Carrington, a psychologist, speaker, best-selling author, known for her honest work with kids, families, teachers, and how we can show up for our kids to make a difference in their lives and take care of ourselves in the process. Dr. Jody Carrington, please fix us all.
Oh my God. Okay. So fix us all. I mean, we got to start with me. I am a hot mess. I always say this, Jen, like, as you know, I wrote a best-selling book called Kids These Days. It's so good. Every time I read it, I think, son of a gun, that should have been a New York Times bestseller. And then if you watch me with my own personal children, you wouldn't buy the book.
I love and appreciate that.
Okay. It's not that we don't know how to do this. I'm just so exhausted. Parenting has never been harder. No. We've never felt more incompetent, mostly because we're the first generation of parents to have access to social media. So we don't talk about this. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have never had so access to so many unadulterated, uneducated opinions in our most tender moments.
Right.
And so we're looking for answers in the middle of the night after we've just had a blow up with our children. Mm-hmm. And all we see is people dressed in cream, which ironically I'm wearing a cream shirt today. But anyway, never mind. Dressed in cream, saying stupid stuff, ridiculous things. Like, you know, did you have a dolphin assisted pool birth?
What?
Are you ingesting lavender oil on the reg? Like all of those things, like sip it, Claire. You know, and so then we just start to feel more and more incompetent. And the more incompetent we feel, the less we have conversations with our best friends, with our kids' teachers, with our mother-in-laws, because we're like, obviously, we're doing it wrong because everybody else on the internet, dressed in creams, working out, drinking collagen, are making homemade Play-Doh with their children and
Yes, of
frolicking.
course.
And I don't even like my
Right.
children.
I love them, but I don't like them. And I don't want to be around them right
Yes.
now.
And it's supposed to be hard. That's the
Dr.
point.
Jodi Carrington, let's talk about the beginning because we have these ideals, right? We have these ideals. We need to self-regulate ourselves so that we can co-regulate with our children, and we need to respond with love and kindness, and we need to hear their heart, not their words. You started your career in psychology working with troubled kids. You were in the juvenile detention centers trying to reach their hearts. What was that like at the beginning? And then it shifted into, wait a minute, the adults are not okay.
Yeah, well, I'll back it up even further. So I grew up in Viking, Alberta, Canada. Okay, so next door to the beautiful province you're in, and in a little town. I remember thinking that one of the greatest humans in my life in those moments of adolescence and all the magic that happens then was a teacher. And she was my favorite teacher. And she like sort of controlled the narrative in moments where us as like 22 kids felt really out of control. Like when a classmate died, when, you know, some of us were going through divorce, when somebody sort of talked about a sexual assault, like all of these things that sort of happen in the holy walls of an education system that nobody really talked about. And she really inspired me to sort of be at the helm of big emotion. What if I was a psychologist? What would that look like? So I started out, I don't even like kids. And so there was no indication in my mind that I was going to work with kids. I only wanted to work with adults. I became a civilian member of the RCMP, really got interested in trauma and relationships and connection and, you know, organizations looking after their people. And then when I did my residency, after I did my master's, my PhD at the University of Regina. So I lived in Saskatchewan for a huge chunk of time, fell in love with the province. And then I did my residency in Nova Scotia. And they said, you have to do a rotation with kids. And I was like, not a fan. And they said, you're kind of like when we think you'd be a good fit. And I had this opportunity to dive into the neurodevelopmental process. You know, once I had sort of already understood about adults and trauma and those kind of things, it was like this beautiful gift to understand from a neurodevelopmental perspective, what looks best for us? How do we develop to be sort of the strongest in this human race?
Yes.
And so then my first job was on a locked psychiatric inpatient unit for kids at the Alberta Children's Hospital.
Whoa, and what was that like?
That's where the learning began. Because I had 13 years post-secondary education at that point and very little experience with sort of, if you can, like the most dysregulated of the most dysregulated.
Yes.
So I love those babies. So the haters, the kickers, the biters, wants to tell you to F off. We were asking the wrong question. We were trained and still are in many ways to ask the wrong question, which is, what is wrong with this one? What is wrong with this one? And you can imagine a locked psychiatric inpatient unit for kids. If you're 12 on a locked unit, there's a litany of reports that would suggest this is wrong with you. This is wrong with you. This is wrong with you. Here's all the diagnostic categories. And what we started to then switch, because I had such beautiful mentors there, instead of asking what was wrong with this one, we started to ask what happened to this one.
These kids already feel like something's wrong with them. They're like, I know I'm broken. I know I'm not functioning. I know something's wrong with me. But they didn't feel seen.
There's always a reason behind the behavior. And it doesn't mean that it condones or excuses the behavior. But once you understand how or why it was developed, it evokes in the big people something called empathy. And empathy becomes the antidote to burnout. It becomes the fuel for us parents in trying to navigate the polary-ish behavior and the pushback, which is necessary. The job of little people is to lose their mind. The job of big people is to walk them home. Again and again and again and again, so that they create the pathways to keep themselves regulated in times of distress. And you can't tell a kid how to do that. You have to show them. If the big people aren't regulated enough to walk them through those hard things at least 30% of the time, they then only enter the big world with three emotional regulation strategies on board: fight, flight, and freeze. That's what we're all born with. Our job of big people, teachers, parents, grandparents, aunties, cookums, is to walk our babies through emotional distress so they learn how to feel that in their body so that they can do that when big people aren't there.
What I'm hearing from Dr. Jodi Carrington, master psychologist and wonderful human, brutally honest, and that's why we love her so much, is the first thing, instead of saying, what's wrong with you? Let's ask, what happened? What happened? And that will help us to have empathy, will help us to show up a little better for our kids and to stay in those hard emotions. And now you're saying we have to walk them home through it. It's their job to freak out. It's their job to not be okay. we have to walk them home over and over and over. And that's, I think, the hardest part. Dr. Jody, I hate that.
Well, that's why the kids aren't the problem. That's why, you know, we need the most support and understanding and reassurance and safe places to land. And the again and again, is this normal? Should my kid be this pushy? Should they be like, are we giving them all of those questions are so significant. And I mean, you know, I've spent a lot of time in the education system because I think one of the holiest underserved groups on this planet are educators. Our children spend more waking hours with teachers in the run-up of school week than they do with their primary caregivers. And we have spent a lot of time in the education system worried only about the child. So I've worked with in every province, every territory in our country with education systems. And I always ask this question, you know, what are we doing for the kids? And, you know, boards of education have mantras, kids first, kids matter. They have pins, they have all the things, which is, I mean, obviously very true. And so when I ask anybody, you know, what do you do, any board of education, what do you do for the children? There's a litany of responses like, you know, we have zones of regulation. We have the Leader in Me program. We have everybody got a Chromebook. We got nutrition services on board. We got this, like all the sports programs. Amazing. Oh my God. That's so cool. What do you do for the teachers? And it's crickets. And they'll say things like, well, okay, listen, they get to wear jeans on Friday.
Yeah. We bring them a lunch every 3 months.
We have a potluck. And I'm like, holy moly, Nothing says you matter like bring your own food.
Right.
This isn't a question of capacity. It's access to that capacity. We're the first generation of parents and leaders who have access to social media. We're not talking about it. I buried my dad 372 days ago. And I always, the thing I admired the most about my father was his love for people. And anywhere we would go, I had a front row seat as his daughter watching him see people and light up around people. And he was funny and engaged, and he built businesses and people. And he was this like successful businessman because he knew how to see people. And I think one of the things that disappoints me the most about myself in this moment is at 50, as a psychologist, I'm done with people. Like I want to throat punch everybody. And that's a problem. You know, that's a problem as a psychologist. And I know humanity, I have so much hope for humanity, but I just feel like people are so dumb. And so I'm struggling with like, what is the difference between him and me in one generation? How come, you know, this desire to spend time with people, which we're connected for, we're neurobiologically connected for connection we're wired for connection. And we're the first generation in the history of the world that has been this depressed and this anxious. And why is the question? And it's like the only system that has not been updated in the history of the world, despite the fact that we've witnessed technological advances and advances in medicine and science and other things, the system that will never be updated is the human operating system. We still require something to regulate our nervous system so that we can continue to give it to the next generation. And as parents and as leaders, we've never been this overwhelmed.
And dysregulated and overstimulated, and we don't have real connection. Dr. Jody Carrington, now, because we are all about helping people have a better life, what would you say to the province? What would you say to parents, to teachers, to adults? We care about the young people. But we know that we are not okay. We've got to take a quick break. But when we come back, Dr. Jody Carrington, what would you say to us? What do we need to do? Practical tips for when you're feeling overwhelmed and overstimulated. It's a better life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Dr. Jody Carrington, psychologist, best-selling author, renowned speaker. She has devoted her life and her passion towards taking care of ourselves so that we can take care of the little people around us. None of this works if we're not okay. And on this show, we are all about helping people have a better life, including ourselves. We want to show up for our kids. We want to reach their hearts and connect with them. We want to help them through their own big emotions. But what about us when we're overwhelmed and overstimulated and dysregulated and we don't have one more ounce of patience in us? What would you say to parents, to teachers, to adults? We care about the young people, but we know that we are not okay. What do we need to do?
Number one, they're going to be okay. Number two, drop your shoulders. Come on back to the best parts of you. You are loved and so important to so many people. If you only knew, just the showing up is more than you could ever imagine, particularly in this season. A regulation in our own bodies, especially if we've never learned it, if we haven't had a lot of mentors in our world to do that. Parents ask me this all the time. Like, if nobody's ever shown me how to do it, how do you expect me to show my children? If I lose my mind every time, not because I want to, but I just have no other option, it feels like, in my body. It is like a practice that you can always get good at. You can always get better at. And oftentimes as we step into the adolescent years, I mean, every section of our kids' lives evokes something in us in different ways. The baby stage, I thought I was going to love. I hated because I was so scared for them that I couldn't communicate. I didn't know what was wrong. I thought I was just going to love everything about it. I yeah. did not. I love this stage with a house full of teenagers way more than this has been my favorite stage of parenting, despite the fact that I've never felt more incompetent. I love to watch them push back. I love to watch them come up with things, their personalities evolving. And I have never, you know, felt more like, whoa, my, like, what is happening to these humans who used to be kind people? And are they going to survive in this world? So the greatest task for me has been to, okay, how do I stay regulated?
Yes. Dr. Jody Carrington, psychologist, author, speaker, passionately helping us to take care of ourselves so we don't lose it on people. To me, being regulated is just a fancy word for a calm nervous system. It doesn't mean life is easy. It means your body feels safe enough to handle it. How, though? How do we do that?
Let's just really know what it feels like for us to be regulated. So this is what it feels like. Okay, so drop your shoulders. If you're driving, if you're listening to this, wherever you are, you can do this. Just keep your eyes on the road. Relax your jaw. One of the most primitive responses to stress is we lock our jaw and slam our tongue to the roof of our mouth. Okay, so our ancestors still live very much in our bones. And so even just two generations ago, you would lock your jaw for hand-to-hand combat to protect yourself. Now, what locks our jaw is an email notification, which the average person gets 147 of those a day. And we're strapped to an Apple Watch.
So it's never unlocked.
No. We've never seen rates. And this is evidenced by the fact that we've never seen rates of TMJ. They're skyrocketing. Now, people say this is, you know, we haven't been able to measure it before. We've never seen so many issues, dental issues, because from the neurophysiological responses to this overwhelm, this noise. Before we even pee, we're checking our phones. And we're the first generation of people who've done that.
I wonder if it is all tied to technology. Even me personally, I now am getting Botox injections in my jaw. I'm carrying stress in my face while I sleep and I can't control it and it's causing migraines. So you're not wrong at all. Dr. Jody, we gotta do something about this.
So drop your shoulders, drop your jaw, wiggle your toes. Two deep breaths in and an out like this. When you go like this, it sounds like you're crying. And often what it signals to the body is that there's a safety in this moment, better than just a deep breath. So if you feel this in this moment, wiggle your toes, let your gut out, drop your shoulders, watch your jaw. If you just do a sweep from your head to the tip of your toes and just give it permission to just be still, that's a relaxed body. That indicates for the first time in a long time that your nervous system is safe. And often when you tell yourself to drop your shoulders, two things will happen. Either you'll start to cry or you'll get really tired. So we tend to yawn because you can imagine after you just suggest to your nervous system, not your brain, but your nervous system that she's safe in this moment. It's like, really? Okay. And you just want to sleep.
Yeah.
And so that's a great sign. And so what we want to talk about is like when we're laying in bed at night, really being clear that you're reprocessing your whole day, but I want you to do that in a calm body. If you can have little reminders during the day, like a note on your computer that says shoulders, on your bathroom mirror, in your car, just sort of remind your body that she's safe in this very busy, overwhelming, uncertain environment that we're raising our babies in these days.
Dr. Jody Carrington, author of Kids These Days, Teachers These Days, and Feeling Seen. Get those books anywhere you grab your books. And also, you can also listen to her podcast, Unlonely with Dr. Jody. Thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Jen Dean.
Take a deep breath, drop your shoulders, and remember, you don't have to have it all figured out today. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with me. I'm Jen Dean. For coaching resources, want to come on the show and get some free coaching? Or you have a great topic for a show idea, visit abetterlifewithjendean.com. Search the show wherever you get your podcasts for an archive of all of our past episodes and let me know what you think. It's a Better Life with Jen Dean on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.